This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.
Conan doesn't have to be as clean as the other ones. Like, you can say shit on Conan. And the first one I had, this set, I had a shit and a dick. And he goes, you have to pick shit or dick. You can't say shit and dick. It still needs to be kind of clean. We can't have both. So he's just like, let me know which one you want to say.
I love comedy.
And I cut out the, I cut out shit and kept the dick.
Okay.
Because I ran it without, and that's one of the things where I was like, I'm going to run it with only shit and then I'm going to run it with only dick.
Yeah.
And dick worked better than shit.
Hot breath. What's up, Hot Breath-averse? You're in the right place. Yes, it is I, your host, comedian Joel Byers. And you know what time it is. Hot breath. Oh, it feels good to say that here on Hot Breath episode number 157. We have been doing that for 150 episodes now. Every single one annoying my wife a little bit more and more every time, which makes it totally worth it. And this is a nostalgic episode for you here. So if this is your first time tuning in or you've just caught up on a couple of the recent ones, you got to go back in the catalog. This week's guest was our second guest ever. Número dos. Hot Breathisode número dos. And since I've interviewed this dude, he's been on Conan twice, Comedy Central multiple times, Just for Laughs in Montreal, like... I interviewed him right before he moved to LA, so you can go back, and this episode, his first episode, will be linked in the show notes, so you can go back and hear his first episode, and then hear where he is now, just a couple years later. It is absolutely incredible. He is an incredible comedian, and also a savvy comedian. He has a very great way of navigating the comedy network. You know, if you've heard some of my other episodes, you've heard people break down show business as the show is a job and then the business side is a job. Well, my guest today does a good job at both jobs. So you're definitely going to want to take notes. This is a winner right here. One of my favorites to date. I'm not trying to pick favorites here, but there's a lot of good gems in this one. And before we even recorded this, he stopped by my comedy class and spoke to my class for like an hour, answering questions and all that jazzercise. So if you're interested in hearing him in a more kind of intimate environment, just talking to newer comedians and answering a bunch of their questions, you can head on over to our Patreon. I posted it up there. There's a video of it, so you can actually see and hear all of it. But that'll also be linked in the show notes. If you heard a bonus episode last week, I revealed we do have a Patreon now, patreon.com/hotbreathpod. That is where the comedy network lies. You know, I talk about turning Hot Breath beyond a podcast into a comedy network. So on there, you're going to get exclusive content. Just like me recording this, they have a cool feature on Patreon I didn't even know about called Lens, where I can actually go live and interact and engage. And it's only up for 24 hours. So I'm going to post a video of me even recording this and behind the scenes. And a lot of you had contacted me about just wanting to know more about the process and learn more about building out the network and how you can help. So there you go. You asked for it and you shall receive. The Comedy Network has now launched and it's over on patreon.com/hotbreathpod. So thank you for your support. We've been churning out free content for over 150. This is 157 Hot Breath episodes now. So, tis the season. It's around the Christmas time. If you need gifts as well, I just launched an online store with all the Hot Breath merch. That'll be linked in the show notes as well. But that is it. A lot of exciting news here in the intro, I know. But let's get to the interview, okay? I know you're getting a little antsy. I'm like, okay, Joel, what is this? This is just a commercial for you saying, oh, you're actually trying to monetize this platform you've been building for 3 years for free, averaging 15 hours an episode of work. Well, I mean, if you put it that way, sorry for trying to come up, you know, my bad. My bad, hot brother and sistren. Sorry for trying. Sorry for trying to apply myself. so that I can then reinvest the money into building out the network. You know, I have big ambitions for this. I want this to become like a not only a comedy network, but a comedy publication where there's a whole website and there's a whole blog and there's a whole vision behind this. And the whole point of the Patreon is to be able to start to make that happen quicker. And with your help, we can start to build out this platform to what I think we all believe is the potential of this. If you look in the comedy game, there's no one really doing what we're doing here. So with your support over on the Patreon page or in the merch store, we're going to be able to build up that website quicker and get that international exposure that I think, based on your feedback, we all believe is the end result of the quality we're providing here. So that being said, we have a quality interview for you today. Yes. So I said all that to say, there is only one thing left to do. And that is inhale a hot breath with Caleb Sinan.
Oh man, I saw Bert Kreischer right after that. What was it? Joe Rogan gave him a huge bump, but then it was that that machine bit. Did you see that bit?
Yeah,
that went like crazy viral.
Mm-hmm.
The like in Russia bit, and I don't know him personally, but I was in Denver when he was in Denver, and I just went to go check out his show, and you could tell he was like I think they added like five shows
after the
he was doing
viral.
Like Mondays and Tuesdays, uh-huh. And he was just staying in town, like did the weekend, and then was like doing like he was like, well, they're added three more shows tomorrow night. I mean, he was just selling out. He was like, this is like amazing.
That's what's good to see with people at his level, though, is like someone who did it the long way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just hold on, I forgot. Hold on, we have water now too.
Oh, shit.
As you're drinking your water.
Ooh, branded water.
That's for you.
Hell yeah.
Fontas water.
I love that.
But we got local Georgia Mountain Blue
Coolest
Ridge.
Water for the hottest podcast.
Hey.
Hell yeah.
We made it.
We made it. Cheers.
So that's for you, man. Cheers, buddy.
Thanks, dog.
Oh yeah. Every episode will now begin with a
nice cold drink.
He knows it.
Oh, I know it. I know it, baby.
I'll go to like open mics and I'll like sometimes I've gotten introduced as he's Mr. Hot Breath, or like people will do it in the crowd.
I'm a hot brethren. My sister's a hot sisterin.
We out
I
here.
Know all the shit. What's up, what the fuckers? What the fuck, buddies? It's hot breath.
You've been down.
Keep it crispy.
You were episode two, man.
Yeah, episode two.
I wore this shirt for, this is the OG logo I made before realizing, oh, design could matter.
Yes, it could.
So this was the one I made, but this was our first merch ever, and I had to wear it because you were our second episode ever.
Yeah, that was back in the day. Ground floor of Hot Breath.
And that was ground floor of Caleb Sinan.
Right. I wasn't shit.
I picked you up from the MARTA station.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. That's when you really know. Like,
And the great part was you were just about to move to LA. Like literally, I think that week.
Yeah,
you
was
were
that
moving.
Week.
So I'll link the first episode in the show notes because this was like pre-LA Caleb, and then you move there, and then I feel like in a couple months you're like on Conan, and I was like, wait, what happened? Wait, what? What?
I felt the same way. I was like, whoa. It made me feel like life wasn't real.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was like, I'm going to move to LA and do Conan, and I'm like, that exact thing happened. I'm like, what are the odds? Like,
yeah.
That was just absurd to me that you can just think something and do it, and I'm like, could I just do anything? Like, you know, and I'm like, could I be an astronaut? Like, I don't want to be, but I was like, it was just crazy how quick it happened. And
how,
people couldn't believe it.
Yeah, how?
I couldn't believe
how
it.
Did it happen?
Well, I moved in July, and at the end of the month, I did Just for Laughs.
Right.
And the booker saw me at Just for Laughs, and they booked me for September. So it was 2 months later, and then I did Conan.
Oh, so 2 months later, I didn't realize it was that fast.
Yeah.
Did you know you were doing Montreal before you moved out there then?
I knew in June that I was doing Montreal. So I knew for a few weeks.
Okay.
I don't think, maybe a month. Where'd they see you? The Laughing Skull Festival. And
you came in second.
Came in second. Right. And I was like, oh. But then now I'm like, oh, it's fine. Mm-hmm. It was more about getting seen than winning. And you always want to win. And coming in second is like, it's coming in second, it sucks because you get your hopes as high as they can be and then they're dashed. If you're eliminated first, it's like your hopes are, you know, they weren't that high. So I keep trying to, it's like when you get to the World Series and lose, it's like, don't get me this excited.
Who won?
Won the Dodgers.
No, do you remember who won the Laughing Skull Fest that year?
Oh, of course I do. I'll think about it till I die. It was Grant Lyon. And I love Grant. We're friends. And,
good.
But I do think about it. I mean, I'm not mad anymore.
Well, clearly.
But at the time, and he also did have a better set than me. Like, well, yeah. I was at the show. He had the best set on the show. He killed. Like, he destroyed. And I was like, he deserves to win.
It's interesting you said it's not always about winning. It's about being seen. Have you found that to be the case in all your success, really?
Yeah. It's a weird career, but it's still a career. Every time someone gets a promotion in some real industry, it's usually because of who they know or something. It's not always who's the best. And people are like, oh, it's not fair. I mean, not, a lot of things aren't fair.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know. If you bomb, but someone who is important likes it, that's better than having a good set. As long as you have a good, you could bomb and the Conan booker likes your set. And then as long as you kill on Conan, it's all good.
Right.
Some crowds are wrong.
And it takes like a professional eye, like a Conan booker, to be like, that wasn't the best audience. I know what comedy is. And that was comedy.
And one time he messaged me and was like, you don't have to send me a video. He's like, you can just use your phone recorder. He's like, I know what you look like.
Huh.
And I was like, oh, okay, thanks.
Is that how you got the second go around? Because you've been on Conan twice now. Was the second submission like a phone video?
The second one, he saw me do it at, it was another festival. It was, I think, Bridgetown.
Oh.
And he was like, all right, can you send me, let's just record it on your phone and send me that set again? I was like, okay. And then he called me at like 5 in the afternoon and was like, can you do it in the morning? Like tomorrow, like 2 p.m.?
What?
The car picks you up. And I was like, okay. I think someone had canceled that day.
Uh-huh.
I was like, we need someone for tomorrow. And I'd already done it before. So he's like, whatever. He won't be that nervous. He's already done it. And the set's ready to go. So yeah, I had less than 24 hours notice and it was great.
What was going through your head? Like, were you kind of panicking or like, what do I do?
I didn't have time to panic. As soon as he said, can you do it tomorrow? I was like, all right. And then I messaged a show that was near my apartment and was like, I'm doing Conan tomorrow. Can I run the set? And they're like, of course. And then so I sent the email, they emailed me back. I went to the bar, ran it, went home, went to sleep, woke up and then did it.
You only ran it once?
Well, I could only run it once.
I don't know if you were, I would have tried to cram like 5 sets in that night and be like, oh.
No, I mean, I wouldn't want to do that. Like the first time I did Conan, I didn't run it the night before. Because I knew a week in advance the first time and I ran it and I was like, okay, it went good. I don't want to get tired of these jokes. I don't want to get, I don't want it to feel monotonous. And I was like, the night before I'm going to do all different jokes and then tomorrow I'll be excited to do these. I didn't want it to be like, going through the motions.
Yeah. Take us through the motions of getting on Conan. Cause all of us as comedians will see a Conan set and we'll be like, oh, awesome. They did it. They climbed that mountain. But all we see is like the 5 minutes or whatever it is. But what is all like the behind the scenes that we may not see?
Well, Conan doesn't have to be as clean as the other ones. Like you can say shit on Conan. And the first one I had this set, I had a shit and a dick. And he goes, you have to pick shit or dick. You can't say shit and dick. It still needs to be kind of clean. We can't have both. So he's just like, let me know which one you want to say.
I love comedy.
And I cut out the, I cut out shit and kept the dick.
Okay.
Cause I ran it and that's one of the things where I was like, I'm going to run it with only shit. And then I'm going to run it with only dick.
Yeah.
And dick worked better than shit.
How many times do you think you ran that set?
That exact set was a lot because that's a set I did in Montreal. So I ran it. It was pretty close to the set I did at the festival. And then it was pretty close to the set I was doing in Atlanta at the time, like a 5-7 minute set. And those are all, I've been doing a lot of those jokes for at least like a year, maybe two. And then there was a couple of new bits in there, which I didn't expect him to like. I was just like, oh, those are new, whatever. And he goes, no, that needs to be in the set. And I was like, that?
Mm.
So I was a little surprised by some of his choices. But for the most part, I was like, I was building my late night set anyway, as good as I could guess what it would be like. And so he only made a couple of cuts.
Oh, like what?
Well, he would be like, well, like, and he has very interesting theories for why you should cut certain things. And he would use terms like going back to the well. Like if you have similar punchlines, where it's like, this is one where you talk about something, something, something. And then at the end, you kind of pull out the rug and be like, because I was in the thing. And then it's like a reveal of like, that's funny because you didn't know the entire time that it was my mom or something or whatever that
is. He's not a doctor. He's a janitor.
Yeah.
Right.
And then if you have another one like that, he's like, well, those are similar. So within 5 minutes, if you get two laughs that are two the same, I don't think it'll hit as hard. Even if it does well, it's like for a 5 minute piece, it doesn't make as much sense. And which I think is true.
Yeah.
And it's not something I really thought about before we would work on sets. And, he also really likes, especially for a late night set, I think about classic stand up, like one of the jokes I would do. That's just easy to remember. Like fun. Like in the second one where I said, people think I'm a nice guy, but it's really just that I'm from the South and I treat everybody like they have a gun, which is like a quick little, it's not alt-y. It's not a character. It's just me saying a thing like people think this, but really it's this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, and that always gets a laugh. Like, and it's one of those ones where I was like, I bet he's going to like that. That's a guy in front of a curtain on TV. Hey, like it's just a classic thing, but he also likes weird stuff, but I think he likes a mixture of it. And, I like getting different kinds of laughs. Like I would have like, here's a one liner. Here's a big act out of my dad. Here's something silly. Here's, just to have a variety so that people are like, oh, this guy's, you know, he's got a whole bag of tricks.
So he can do more than just a kick flip.
Yes.
He can like grind and like do a backflip.
Right.
Like
anybody with, that's showcasing your talent for an audience, you want to showcase it. You don't just want to show them, you know, you wouldn't juggle for 5 minutes. You juggle and then you balance something on your head and then you do a flip. You would never, on America's Got Talent, like everyone has to like, here's a few things I can do.
That's gold.
Yeah.
That even for like your submission tape into one of these late night shows.
Yeah.
That's something you want to check off the list.
Yeah. Show them a little bit of what you got, you know, cause you're saying, hey, to, even though it's not like everyone in America watches it, but, comedy fans, you know, a lot of people watch Conan online and stuff. And, it's kind of your intro to, hey, I'm in the scene. I'm in the mix here. And, I mean, for me, I was hoping people would see me on Conan and be like, oh, I want to book them at my club.
Mm-hmm. Did that happen?
It did. It took a while, but, you know, people end up seeing it. And, I think a lot of clubs, they sit down and they book their whole year in 1 week, like one sitting. They're just like, boom, 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 boom. And then it's done. And, but yeah, now it's like, to me, it was an odd, Conan was great, but, I feel like the Conan clip existing on the internet is like an audition, a permanent audition tape. Like, oh, maybe he'd be fun for this or this web series, or maybe he could write on this, you know, it's just out there forever for people to look at.
Yeah. It's a good quality tape to have instead of you submitting it from like this shaky camera in the back of a bar. It's like, no, here's me presented professionally with good audio, good video, and a nice overarching kind of experience of what my like workflow is.
Yeah. And I think people like, cause I mean, that's the way I felt before I did Conan. I was like, watch those clips and be like, oh, this guy. But yeah, it was a fun experience for sure.
And yeah.
Both times very exciting.
After seeing you on Conan, like you said, it's like I moved to LA and then got on Conan too much. It kind of lets you know what's possible.
Yeah.
So even seeing you get on Conan, it was like, oh, yeah, people do it. Like I was just talking to him. it took the mysticism out of like climbing Mount Conan or whatever.
Yeah.
And like it was a goal for a while, but I think I had the wrong intention where I was like, I want to be on Conan so comics think I'm cool. But
right.
I want to do it now for like you showed me it's possible. So yes. Like, I want to do it from Atlanta to be like, look, it is possible. Just like Dusty Slay from Nashville has been on Kimmel and Fallon while living out of Nashville.
Oh yeah.
So it's inspirational.
Yeah. It's very inspirational. And it's just a crazy thing. It's crazy to be able to, for it to be, cause as a kid, I would see comedians on late night and be like, these are gods.
Yeah.
These are like, and it's like, no, they're not. These are, they're just people. They're just people doing stand up.
I remember when Atlanta had the improv, I won't say his name because the dude's hilarious, but he had just come out with a half hour. He was headlining the improv that weekend and it did not go well. And you like see me like, oh, he has a half hour. And then it was not the hour. He had a half hour, but that hour set.
Yeah.
It was not there.
Yeah. There's a reason it was a half.
Right.
But yeah, he didn't show him that other 30 minutes.
Right.
But yeah, it's like people, you think these people are bulletproof and it's like, nobody's bulletproof.
Yeah.
Everybody can bomb and it's going to happen. Yeah, I love it. It never doesn't entertain me where I'm like, there it goes.
Yeah. You just had one.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm going to have one some more.
Yeah. We all are.
I keep having them.
Yeah. But Chappelle got booed a couple. That's what keeps me. I'm like, Chappelle got booed a couple years ago. Everybody bombs.
Yeah.
Okay.
It just, sometimes it just doesn't work.
Yeah. What are some of the main reasons have you found that maybe it just doesn't work that night?
Sometimes you are just not matching the mood. You're really, have you ever kissed someone and their lips are like cold and you're like, oh no, you know what I mean? And they're dead. But, like you're just, like you both want to kiss. You both like each other, but it's just the chemistry just doesn't. And maybe it was good before, but it's just like, this is just not the night for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not working out. Or sometimes you'll just eat something and be like, I'm sick of eating this. I don't know what it is, but sometimes it's just something in the air and you're just meeting them, you know. I don't know why it keeps coming back to kissing, but like you try to kiss someone and then you just bump teeth and it hurts.
Yeah.
It just kind of takes the fun out of it. And sometimes you're just like, this crowd and me are just not getting on that same wavelength. Or like you should have addressed something and at first they're weirded out. You didn't address it. Or you fumbled a word and then you did address it, but then that got them distracted and they didn't get your first punchline. And then you deliver the next joke in a sort of a sour mood because the first joke didn't go good. Yeah. Then they're like, oh, I don't like this energy.
Yeah.
This sour energy. And, or you didn't watch the comedian before you, you didn't watch their set. And, you opened with a similar joke to one of theirs and they're like, what didn't he? Now they're confused. Like, is he in this room or did he just get here? Did he not know? And now they're distracted. I mean, there's so many things. And then sometimes you just don't know. You're like, I don't know what I did wrong. You know, it's just like in a relationship where you're like, she's mad. Mm-hmm. Don't know what it is. But, or he.
Sometimes you recover and sometimes you just sometimes go down in flames.
Don't. Yeah. And then you just got to take those L's because they happen. And you learn from them. I mean, there's
totally.
It makes you better. Or maybe it doesn't. I don't know. I say that just so hope so.
Nah, I think bombing makes you better for sure. I think you learn from your failures.
Yeah.
Do you find the more confident you are on stage, almost the more confident the audience will be in you? And then like when the confidence shrinks, like if one joke misses and your confidence starts to shrink, then the audience starts to shrink. Do you find that?
Unless it's specifically part of your persona that mm-hmm. you're like a nervous, like a twitchy comedian or something, or like your thing is that you're like a sheepish, you know, so you see people do that, but they're still delivering that character. Like if you're auditioning for a role of sheepish guy, you can still go in there and crush that audition. And someone can be doing a bad job of being sheepish and not get that part.
Right.
So I've seen people that like Adam Sandler, I love, and he's got that great, like, hey, but he's killing it at that. He's mm-hmm. not, you know, he's really delivering on that persona. And, I think a crowd can tell when you're like big dick swinging. Hey, this is a killer opener. This is my killer follow up. And I'm doing this. And I think they have a good time that way. You know, it's like a rock star wouldn't be like, is this a good guitar? Like, you got to sell it.
If it fits your persona, though. I think self-awareness is a big part in stand-up.
Yeah. You got to know how they see you and what you look like, what you seem like, and how you take the stage.
How were you able to discover that for yourself?
Failure. I'd be like, well, I really thought I could be like Eddie Murphy. And I just realized that, oh, he's Eddie Murphy and I'm Caleb. And I can't be Eddie Murphy and I shouldn't want to be. I need to be me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still a work in progress. But it's like once you realize what you're like and you watch yourself on stage and you watch people react to you and, oh, this is a way I can win them over. I can't come out guns blazing all the time. Sometimes you got to bring them in and then ramp it up. And every crowd is different because it's a different combination of people on a different day. And some days you gotta say something. Some days it's like, I mean, politics is always a thing where it's like, sometimes you gotta address that. It's weird if you don't. Sometimes it's weird if you do. They're like, come on, we've had enough.
Right.
And you just kind of have to gauge it and be a person in the world. Like, are people sick of this kind of thing? Are they not sick of it? You see some people, they do like 1980s style gay jokes. And it's like, I think people are sick of that.
For sure.
I don't know if you're like fingers on the pulse anymore. But it seems like you've never met a gay person in your life. You really think that? Okay. It's just, and you can tell the crowd's like, oh, we liked you. And then you said that. And sometimes you can tell the second someone loses a crowd and they don't know they did, but they know they're gone. They're like, which one? And you can see them being like, what? But sometimes it's like you were killing it. And then you like, it's like you just like surprise the crowd with a finger in their ass and they're like, no. It's like, I mean, we liked it, but then you did that. And
yeah, I discovered when I got angry, like genuinely angry, the crowd would shut down. I can get sarcastically angry, but I would find I would lose audiences in the middle of a set if I was just like started like getting angry about something. Like, no, why is babyface baby boy getting angry? Like it didn't translate with what my like delivery system is.
Yes. And sometimes people think they're doing a better job of masking their anger than they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's even worse when you're like, oh, he doesn't know we know. And crowds, once they feel like you're not in charge or, oh, he thinks he's in charge, like it's like a mutiny. They're like, you don't tell us what to do anymore. And, and sometimes you can tell when the host walks back up and they're like, it's almost like they're in on it with the host. Like the host knows that he didn't get us. And, I hate that feeling when you bomb and then the host goes back up and goes, well, even if they're a nice host and they don't like roast you afterwards, you're just like, all right. And then you hear them do a joke and get them back. And you're like,
And sometimes you open really big and then every joke after that like, just that? Gets sequentially worse.
Yeah. And you're like, boy,
oh, I peaked 10 minutes ago.
Yeah. It's the worst.
How have you been able to, in your experience, sometimes you can get them back and sometimes you never wrestle them back. But what have you found to be effective in wrangling them back in?
Well, it depends on what lost them. Like sometimes I'll lose them. I'll go too dirty too quick. And they don't trust me yet or they don't like me yet. You know, I haven't, I was doing good, but I was doing good cause I had some solid jokes and then I'm like, all right, let's do some dirty jokes. And they're like, we don't know yet. I don't know about that. We were laughing earlier, but it wasn't cause we like you. It was cause of the jokes. And now that's something we need to like you for.
Right. Right. You know?
That episode of Seinfeld where he's like, you want to help me move? And he's like, I don't know if we're there in our friendship yet. And that you just kind of jump the gun on certain things or, so I try to figure out, okay. And sometimes it's hard in the moment on the fly, like to be like, oh, I gotta try this. But a lot of times addressing it and being like talking to the crowd for a minute or interacting with them or, you know, just being real for a second, the other night at the Laughing School, I was just kind of felt like, I didn't like my last set that it was good, but I just didn't really feel like in it like I wanted to.
Yeah.
Because you know how it feels now. Like I've done that club enough to know how it feels when you're really cooking. And I was like, I just didn't feel like I was really in there. And then the next set I was like, because what was on my mind, because you know when you can talk to someone and they're just not there with you, you're like, oh, you're thinking about your taxes or something. Right. We're not connecting. And I was really thick, because I hadn't seen any of the Brian Kemp, Stacey Abrams stuff. I'd been keeping up with the California stuff, and I hadn't followed the Georgia race. And then people were showing me stuff all day, like, you haven't seen these Brian Kemp ads? And they'd show them to me, and they made me laugh so hard because I couldn't believe they were real. He literally said, I got a big truck in a political ad. He told us he had a big truck. It killed me. That's all I could think about. And I was like, if this crowd were my friends, and I want them to feel like they're my friends, if I was meeting them in a bar, which this is, we're drinking, I would go, have you guys seen that Brian Kemp shit? Like, that's how I would talk to my friends. Yeah. And I was like, even if this doesn't kill, I want to talk to them about this, because this is on my mind all day today, and it would feel weird to not let this out. And I can do my prepared stuff otherwise, but... And that really it put me in a good mood. It did well. The rest of my set did better than my set before. I just needed to say it.
And that made it more conversational.
Yeah.
And like more, because like stand-up, you're hanging out.
We're hanging out.
That's the allure of stand-up is like, oh, he's just thinking of all this conversationally. Mm-hmm. It's the magic trick.
Yeah. And sometimes some crowds are easier to fool than others. And some of them want to be fooled. It's like going to see a magician.
Yeah.
And I had this bit I do, like I try not to wear glasses on stage so I can use my eyes more. But I'd like to do, there's an impression of Mike Pence I do with my glasses. But if I don't have them on, I'll just take someone's glasses and use it like that. Like, can I borrow your glasses for this impression? And last night, this lady was just super drunk. It was her birthday. She had a big birthday sash on.
Oh my God.
And she's like, just like talking in between every joke. And then she's drunk and she's like cleaning her glasses and stuff. And I'm like, oh, you're not even watching me anymore? You're taking a break. Okay. You're really participating now. You're like, I don't even need to see him. And so I was like, can I have those? And I took her glasses. And then people thought I thought of that because she took her glasses off. But I'm like, I've been doing this bit for like a year.
Boom.
But there, people came to me like, oh, you were so in the moment. And then and I was like, I'm glad you think that. But I mean, when I saw the glasses, I was like, this is going to be perfect. This is going to look so fun and organic. And it was fun because I was like, oh, yeah, that reminds me of my bit with the glasses. I didn't tell her that. I was just like, oh, let me have these. And then
right.
I did it. And people thought, oh, it's like, it's so cool. But it's just, that's part of the thing of like being a comedian. There's a reason they came to see you live and then just watch you on YouTube. They can do that for free.
Mm-hmm.
But to give them a little something, like, I don't have anything about Brian Kemp on YouTube because it's new to me. So it's just fun to be able to interact with them sometimes.
Have you been able to find, because your style is, I mean, you're only 7 years in. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've been on Conan twice and Comedy Central and Last Comic Standing, all this jazz. Did I leave anything out? Is there anything else you want to boast?
Laughs on Fox.
Laughs.
Laughs on Fox.
Perfect. Perfect. I taped a Bossip special that never aired. So
nice.
That's my claim to fame. Oh, and I taped Roast Battle that never aired either. So.
Oh, yeah.
Grateful both never came out in hindsight.
Oh, yeah.
Very grateful. But in you being so early into comedy, you have been able to, it seems like you've clearly, you know, I've interviewed people 15 years in who are like, you know, I think I'm just now starting to get this comedy thing.
Mm-hmm.
So at every level, I think we're always like, well, it could be better. What,
yeah.
You know, I discovered this part about me that I like performance style or whatever. But you being only 7 years in and seeming to be like you've found your quote voice, at least more than most people at your level. How have you been able to do that, would you say?
Well, I mean, I'm chipping away at it. I'm not where I want to be yet. I mean, one of the cool things about LA is I'll see everyone. There's a lot of great comedians in LA, but all the best comedians from London, New York, Atlanta, everyone at some point, you got to be there for something. Or do you just want to be there for something? Because it's like, it's a place that you go.
Yeah.
Even if you don't live there, you go there sometimes. So, I mean, I get to see almost every comedian I want to see. Almost everybody who's really great. And, I mean, I'm like, I was on the stage, I've been on that stage, and I know what it sounds like when I'm up there, and it doesn't sound that good. Like, I'll be like, I do not kill like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the people you see kill like that, they're always like 20 years in. Who I'm like, that is like, they're doing some work. That is like, wow. And so I still know, like, even though I've done some things and I've further along than I thought I'd be, I still don't have that 20 years in, like, master of comedy feeling.
Oh, totally. No. Yeah.
So I think I just chipped away and found a little bit of gold, but I don't feel like I'm, like, in the zone like a, you know, Bill Burr or...
Oh, no. I wasn't trying to imply. Yeah. I was just saying... Only 7 years in, you seem to be like ahead of the curve in terms of development. So I didn't know if there were specific techniques or tips you have for other comedians, maybe how what you've had to learn the hard way you could kind of share with them. Well, this helped me, or listening back on my set, that helped me develop this style, or like, you know what I mean?
Well, it's like saying, oh, you got... It's like the old days when people literally had to go to like Oregon Trail to California. You know what I mean? And I went without anything. I went with like a bag and a horse. I didn't have a carriage and a family and like all this stuff. And they're like, well, you got pretty far. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't have anything. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. I put every part of my life on hold because I had that option at the time. You know, starting at 19, it's like, it's easy for me to drop everything because I don't have anything.
Right.
I brought my two bags of stuff to LA.
You moved with your girlfriend, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Have since broken up, so no, it's fine.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah?
So, well, you know, I'm not on Facebook like that.
Well, we didn't do a breakup post, but...
okay.
I don't know. I could use 400 likes. I love a good breakup post. Do you ever read those?
No.
Oh, they're fun.
I'm not on Facebook like that.
Yeah, it's people like think they got to do a press release. They'll be like, "You may have heard," like,
yeah, oh, right?
Yeah, I've heard.
But that is funny. You mentioned before the show one of your you posted about bombing on stage, and that got more likes than your post about getting on Conan.
Yeah,
which is funny.
Well, people love when you do Conan. A lot of people are happy for you.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are not.
Oh.
A lot of people are like, this guy's doing Conan. You know what I mean? Like, there's that's a thing. And it's also, there's nothing that funny about that. You can be funny on Conan, but saying I'm doing Conan, it's not that funny to say. And you could try and make it like a fun, goofy post, like, hey, we'll do Conan, but hey, I still got a tomorrow because
right.
You can kind of make it a lighthearted thing, but no one's like laughing out loud at your Conan announcement. But like, I did one the other day where I said, I just bombed so bad the crowd asked me how I was doing tonight,
mm-hmm.
which is like a Dangerfield-esque, like, hey, which is just funny. Like, why would the crowd's like, are you okay? And that got more likes than either time I did Conan. Because I think people are like, aha, well, you know, he's a drain. Everybody bombs and comedians relate to it. People who don't do comedy are still like, yeah, I've seen people bomb. Like, that's a painful experience, but mm-hmm. he's making light of it. It's just more fun to... I love talking about bombing because it's hilarious to me.
Have you ever been booed?
Yeah.
What is your worst? Because I love talking about bombing, which I think I may have started this before you were on Hot Breath. But I now ask every guest their worst bomb story because I love talking about bombing and laughing at people's bombing expense. So what's your worst?
I don't know if I've told you this story, but it was when I was in Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky. It was my first feature weekend. I was very excited to do it. I was doing 30 minutes, 5 shows. And the first show I bombed bad for 30 minutes. I bombed so bad that I accidentally did a joke twice, but it didn't matter. I bombed the first and second time, just like all the other jokes, like dead silence, icy, stony silence, stares, frowns.
How many people?
It was a full club. I mean, okay. Maybe 150, however big that club is. And so I did, and all the jokes I was doing, I mean, I was trying everything. I think I did every joke I'd ever thought of because I probably did an hour and 15 minutes. I was doing things I've been like, maybe I've never even said this out loud, but I'm out of things to say.
Right. When you bomb, everything shrinks.
Oh, yeah. My whole life, I'm just. And so I did like all my jokes. And I, you know, whatever, my premature ejaculator joke, little penis joke, I'm broke doing taxes joke, nothing, everything, dirty jokes, clean jokes, everything bombs. And the headliner goes up and, he goes up there and goes, give it up for Caleb. He's got a little dick. He comes fast. He's broke piece of shit. Give it up for him. And they laugh so hard at him summarizing me and roasting me. They laughed. So, and he crushed. Uh-huh. And then, so the next night I go, I'm like, man, I ate shit. I got to switch it up. And, so I'm like going through all my notebooks and stuff. And so I do a different 30 minute set and, that bombs too. But the headliner didn't watch me the second time. He's just having a drink in the bar. He assumed I did the same set. So he goes up and goes, give it up for Caleb. He's got a little dick. He comes fast. He's a broke piece of shit. And the crowd like was furious with him. You could hear him going like, like they were like, well, you're so mean. He wasn't funny, but that's not nice to say about him.
Whoa.
And then he bombed. And so I bombed so bad. I like ruined his set.
Oh my. But that's awareness. Like you said earlier,
he didn't
not
watch my
taking
set.
The temperature of the room.
But that was one of the worst bombs I ever had. Cause when you bomb so bad, you repeat a joke. And then there's no recovering from that. I mean, it was like, and to have your whole act bomb where I was like, oh, none of me. You guys don't like any of me. You guys don't like my riffs. You don't like my crowd work. You don't like my new jokes, my old jokes. You don't like. Yeah, like that is a full rejection. And the 30 minutes is long enough to where you're like, oh, I didn't get them in five. But maybe if I would have had a longer set, I was like, nope. There was nothing. I just failed.
Yeah, hard. I've bombed in a 30-minute set, and it's like quicksand. About 15 minutes in, after it feels like an hour 15, I look down, and I'm like, every time you try to fight, you get deeper and deeper into the quicksand.
Oh, yeah. And then it's just like, sometimes I'll be like, there's a way out, and I can't find it.
You're just not that skilled yet.
I just don't have the enough tools in my toolbox yet to find my way out. And there's some people that, even when they bomb, they eventually find their way out a little bit.
Right.
And you'll be like the whole, Bill Burr is always the exact, cause like his whole thing, his persona is such a fuck you guys thing anyway, that when he bombs, you're kind of like glad. You're like, oh, you want him to look at the crowd and be like, oh yeah, yeah. Oh, too much for us. And then he starts going in on you like, oh, we're at the Comedy Store. You know, whatever it is funny.
But that's like, we can think about it. Yeah, but Bill Burr does this, but then it's like, that's like looking at Tom Brady throwing like a 50-yard touchdown. You're like, but he throws a football just like I throw a football.
Yeah,
like,
we both throw,
but
oh shit.
Oh no. Fontas water.
That's how mad I get when you bring up Tom Brady.
Oh no, do we have a towel?
Yeah, that's just like equipment.
Caleb.
Well, I just really wanted to drive home the merch.
Fontas water cleans up well.
Well, this is what's really funny is this is probably what people are going to remember about the podcast. They'll be like, remember when Caleb spilled water?
Nothing.
I'm sorry, guys.
Anything? Oh, I didn't even see that. I just saw it miss the plug, so I didn't panic. Yeah. Is that cord all right?
No, it's fine.
Oh, okay. That's why I like played it off because like, okay, there's nothing getting wet down there. But then I was like, oh, the mic cord.
Yeah.
Where it's connected.
Uh-oh. Well.
Shout out to Amon Garner.
Shout out.
Bold Koi Podcast Network.
You'd think after all these shows, there's always a bottle of water on this. I still don't know how to use one.
You know, even like every now, I would notice when I was taking a drink, I would like put the lid back on. I noticed your lid wasn't on.
Oh boy.
But I didn't want to disrupt your gold comedy.
Couldn't have disrupted much more than what I just did.
We're talking about bombing and then you bomb on a podcast.
Oh yeah. That's a real bomb. I bomb in a studio.
As we're talking about bombing, you're like, well, let's bomb here too. Oh,
yeah. I can ruin anything.
I won't boo you though. You did say you got booed.
The last time I got booed, I assumed I used to do a lot more political stuff than I do now. I mean, I like to talk about politics, but that's what I love about podcasts is that kind of gives you the freedom to talk about it. Cause sometimes you can really lose a crowd with political, you can lose a crowd that agrees with you with political stuff. Cause they're just tired of hearing it.
Yeah.
And they just don't want to deal with it that day. But one time, I mean, I just really guess I misjudged it. And I was like, I had these political jokes. And I should have just told the jokes. But sometimes you feel like you have to go, hey, explain your beliefs before. But I realized you didn't have to do it. One time I was just like, yeah, I voted for Hillary Clinton. And then I had these Hillary Clinton jokes, which I thought goes, oh, like if you love Hillary, you're like, I don't want to make fun of Hillary. But I was like, no, I voted for her, so. But I do have jokes, but I'm on your team, so don't worry.
Right.
And if you hate Hillary, hey, I voted for her, but I do have some jokes about it. I'm not blind to the humor of you know, making fun of her or whatever. So which I thought was reasonable, but the crowd started booing before I got to finish the premise. They booed me for voting for, and I was like,
wow.
Yeah, but I'm about to tell a joke about it. Like, I'm not, this isn't a rally. And then I just realized, like, I don't know if I should even bother with saying it. Yeah, because to get booed for that, like, what? And then the rest of my set just blew. They just hated it. Like, they were just like, I don't know if it was, everyone in that crowd was either Trump or Bernie or something. And they just hated. They just did not want me saying that.
The quick reaction shows that, especially politics can be divisive. Mm-hmm. But there are some jokes you do where I'll have a feeler where it's like, okay, if they laugh at the first part of the joke, I'll go into the three tags. But if they don't laugh at the first part, I will veer off to another joke.
I will abandon any joke.
For sure.
But then I kind of learned from that where I was like, you know, a lot of people have political jokes. Almost everyone's got these. I want to show the crowd more of my thing instead of, I mean, it's like every late night comedian has them. And they're doing it at the high level that everyone sees. And there's what, 10 of those shows. So if you want that, watch that, or, you know, go see Lewis Black or whoever you like to get your political comedy from. Cause I was like, it's not really my thing. It's not how I'm not like, it's Caleb, the political comedian. So it's not like part of my, I don't have to do it. And I was like, I just feel like it's kind of a waste of time and it pisses people off more than anything.
That self-awareness. Again.
Even though I thought I had some pretty funny Trump and Hillary stuff and Bernie stuff, I thought I had like interesting takes, but I just, I don't know if it was worth it for how often it scuttled my whole set.
And that's what I found is like, for a little while, I was trying to have a message and be like, we're outsourcing labor to China. And these kids are making iPhones. And like the jokes were funny, but they weren't really connected to me. Mm-hmm. And I found when I started to get more personal with my material, I have found ways to start weaving that point of view in. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't just some kid up there just being like, this is what's happening and what's wrong. Now that it comes through me instead of me like pointing at it, I found that can help like kind of make it a little more palatable.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to come across as a crazy guy yelling on the street.
Yeah.
You know, when someone comes up to you, starts handing you something and they got a big sign and you're like, I'm not going to listen to anything you're saying because you're surprising me and you're shocking and you're making me uncomfortable. But if one of your friends goes, hey man, you know what they're doing is really fucked up and you got to help me out with it. And I'm like, oh yeah, that is, now that you put it that way. But the whole I'm just not an in your face. And some comedians are like, that's their style is in your face. And I'm just like, I have to kind of act like I just thought of it. Where I'm like, oh, isn't that, well, I wonder if, cause I can't do the Lewis Black thing.
Oh yeah. So it's almost like you can say it, but it's more unassuming. It's not as like, it's not as personified, maybe. I don't know if that's the word. I pulled out my liberal arts degree for that.
No, I think I know what you mean.
You know, it like Lewis Black is like, I'm angry and saying this and you should listen. But if you say it a little more just sly and a little more like subtly, it comes off better than just this is what's wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. To go like, I like to act like if I were going after something I think is wrong in the world, I would go for it in a story and be like, here's hey, this happened to me the other day and this guy didn't, and then like tell them about a thing that happened that, oh, he tried that and it didn't work, which is a part of the bigger reason this ideology that I think doesn't work.
Great.
But instead of being like, if you think this, you're dumb, I'll go, this guy did this, it didn't work, this guy is dumb, not you or whoever you voted for, but like, and then kind of, because no one wants to listen to you and your side are stupid, or you and what you believe are stupid, or, you know, the people don't like that as much.
Yeah, I learned from a Roy Albanese. I worked with him at Punchline last year, maybe now, but he was like EP of Daily Show for a long time. And now he's doing stand up. Mm-hmm. And I like had these more like political jokes, or I'm just like telling this crowd at the Punchline, like 50-year-old parents, how the world works. And he's like, think about how you're coming off on stage. Like, you're like this young dude trying to tell these people how the world works.
Yeah.
It's like, think about how, like what you're saying, think about how it's coming across through the filter of you. Mm-hmm. And that really changed kind of how I deliver and how I approach material.
Well, you got to think about what is Joel? What made me get into comedy? Who was I making laugh when I had that thought? You know, what do I like about making people laugh? What makes me laugh? And to be more genuine, because it's like, I didn't get into, me and my friends, before I did stand-up, we weren't sitting around talking about China.
Right.
Never did that.
Right.
It's like, we're just, you know, and you, what you find funny can evolve and stuff, but it's like, I try to remember what I actually like to do and what I actually think is funny, instead of what I'm like utilitarian, like, oh, I said that and that's funny, you know, to try and really be yourself.
So you pay attention to how you're funny in conversation and take note of those?
Yeah, because I think that's more me than stage me. But I want stage me to be as close to me as I can, which is not what I, Steve Martin is amazing, but that's, you know, his whole thing is a character that's really funny. But I'm trying to be more, even if it's silly me, like even if it's, even if I'm being dumb, I want to be dumb the way I'm dumb in real life.
Right.
The way I'm being like playing an idiot when I'm hanging out with my friends. Cause that's my favorite. Well, that's still the funniest thing in the world to me, is to act like you don't know something. Just be in it and be like, oh, or like, oh, that's, oh, wait, Obi. And then they're like, oh no, you idiot. That's fun to me. And, that makes my friends laugh. So I'm like, that's probably, that's all I know is effective, really.
So maybe that's how, and like kind of circling back to you only 7 years in, but finding a unique style about you, at least maybe part of that is just paying attention to what and how you're funny in real life.
Yeah.
And then taking that to the stage.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Like one of the ones, this doesn't really work. I tried it on stage like once or twice. It worked okay. But I was talking to one of my friends about politics or something. He was like, I don't know, she's kind of a radical feminist, and I don't really know if I agree with that. And I was like, radical feminist? I was like, what does that mean? She wants rights really bad? And like everybody laughed, because I know that's not what it means. Mm-hmm. But the first thought I had about it was like, what makes it radical? Like a non-radical feminist is like, I want them, but I'm not going to like try. I don't want all these rights. But turns out what it actually means is not funny at all. It's someone who, they're a feminist, but they don't believe trans women deserve.
Oh.
Yeah, they're like, oh, you were, they're like, no, you were born a man, you don't deserve. So that, like, a radical feminist is like,
radical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so anyway, but that's just one of the things where like, I knew it didn't mean that, but saying, oh, is that what this mean? And then people laugh. That's funny to me, to my dumb first thought. And then, but then going, oh, that's probably not what it means. But then pretending I didn't realize it.
Yeah.
Is that's one of my favorites to do is, oh,
even like your first, on your first Conan set, your opening joke was something that just came out in conversation. Mm-hmm. That you ended up opening up Conan with.
Yeah.
So it's like when you have these moments, like when you are funny in real life, do you write these down? Do you type them in your phone? Like keep track of them?
Yeah. Some of them I still fool myself several times a year and go, that's so funny. That's like my new closer. That's the best idea I've ever had. I don't even need to write that down.
Oh, right.
And I forget it 10 minutes later.
Yep.
And I'm like, what was it? I remember, and I'll be like, oh, like, so I try really hard to write it down or put it in my phone as soon as I have the thought. Even if people are like, oh, you're writing that down? You're writing one of your bits down? You think you're going to... And because people will make fun of you and be like, oh, is this a bit? You doing a bit? Is it a bit?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, it's my job.
Yeah. You guys all laughed and that's my job. So maybe what I said to y'all could work for other people. Sorry. This is the most work I have to do is 2 seconds to put it into my phone. So,
and that's something I learned from having Noah Gardenschwartz on here.
Yeah.
Was he was talking about honor the thought. He's like, mm-hmm. He doesn't, if it's 2 in the afternoon or 2 in the morning, he's like, if you think it's funny, honor it by writing it down.
Yes.
Don't just be like, maybe not, or I'll remember it later. He's like, no, honor that idea, mm-hmm. and at least give it the justice of writing it down.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it's a hard job, but how hard is that? You know, how hard is writing your thoughts down?
Right.
It's pretty easy. So give it a shot. And I know this. It's one of those things, you know, it's like knowing McDonald's is bad and then I'm still eating it.
Of course.
2 weeks later, like, well, I'm still, all right. I'll never learn. And then and when I'm like, how do I learn a lesson and still not learn it? How do I know what to do and still go,
Maybe it just wasn't time to learn it.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know. But yeah, I'm better about it than I used to be. But Still not perfect. I still think I've forgotten the three of the best jokes I've ever thought of. Just because.
But even for like when you do a set on Conan, I had I interviewed Jacob Williams on here, who was on Colbert, mm-hmm. and he said there was a teleprompter with his set list. Is that the same at Conan as well?
They give you that option. I didn't use it because I didn't want to look back at the clip and be like, oh, that's me looking back at the tele. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
I was like, if I can't remember these five jokes, I don't need to be on this. And some people are different. I'm sure it's comforting to know I'm not going to forget my spot. But for me, I'm like, most of my jokes are about a minute long. Mm-hmm. So I only need to remember like five. Some people have those quick jokes where I'm like, I'm glad you would need that if you have like, maybe 13 quick jokes.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to forget them. But, for me, I was like, I've run this set so many times. I won't need it.
But even down to like gestures and like how dialed is like that Conan set, like down to like every breath you've pretty much choreographed.
Pretty much. Yeah. Uh-huh. And which is what I would want. There's some that are like, in the second one, I had that the bit I closed with was about being pitched a terrible joke, which was, I love doing that bit because it's me telling you, someone telling me a bad joke. So laughing or not laughing is funny because of that. So that bit is fun because sometimes it goes different just based on when they laugh and why they laugh and, you know, how they laugh, because it's just a different kind of thing. So that one wasn't as dialed in because it was like, who knows how it'll go. It always got a laugh at the end, but I was like, getting there was so fun because you never know when they're going to realize how bad it is. So yeah, it's fun to have some that aren't as scripted, but for the most part, it's like, you know,
all the way through. Yeah. Even like I noticed, cause I'll use your first Conan set as like a case study in my comedy class where I'm like, we'll look at the before and after versions of these jokes you're doing. Mm-hmm. And one of the main differences is, you condense the setup and you're talking way slower, mm-hmm. way slower, like slowing down on stage. I found power in it, but there's also still a hesitation of, oh, I'm going to slow down. Oh, I figured it out. And then one time slowing down isn't quite working. And then you speed back up and you get jittery again. Like, have you found that to be a big difference in your comedy?
Yeah. Some crowds are laser focused in and like a very polite, quiet, good focused crowd. And those are the ones that I like to, you can kind of take it slow or you just kind of feel it out how it's going. Like, it's like you kind of build them up and then, okay, we got the ship going. Now we can turn or whatever. And then there's some crowds that are kind of rowdy and you kind of got to get them up top and then you can bring them in and kind of like slow it down or something. But, it just depends on what they're like. Like, I would definitely, for like a bar crowd, I would be faster, louder, quicker, and dirtier. Cause that's what being in a bar is like.
Interesting.
You're yelling at your friends about sex over beers. Usually that's what's happening. So why would I treat it differently than what it is? We're in a bar, but if you're in a theater, and there's all kinds of plays, but when you're in a theater, it's just a different feeling than a bar or a comedy club, but just to match the venue, like,
match the venue,
match the audience, match the energy. You know, if the guy before you was doing fast, loud, and dirty, and it wasn't working, you might not should do that. Mm-hmm. You know, it might seem he may have guessed wrong. He was like, "Ooh, fast, loud, and dirty," and then nope, you misjudged it. And that's why it's great to go last. Going last is pretty great because you get to see a lot of failure before you.
Well, you're also like you're touring around and headlining a lot now, and in looking at the business side of comedy. In our first interview, you talked a lot about even just your opportunities. Like, you would just email everyone. Even Last Comic Standing, you got the audition from just emailing them.
Yeah.
So, I've always been impressed with your ability to network and navigate that aspect of, quote, show business. You know, the show's a job. The business is a job as well. You seem to be good at both. So, now that you're out in L.A., like, what are kind of some of the business practices you've learned from being out there?
LA is a specific beast and, you kind of got to figure out, how you fit in that lane. Everyone in LA, Dave Ross told me this, a great comedian, very funny guy in LA. And he was like, because I always hate when people move to LA and go, it's hard. And I'm like, what did you think? Yeah. What did you think?
Right.
You think because the sun is shining, that changes it? It's great. Like, well, surfing. Like, no. No one is surfing. Mm. People are hunched over their computers trying to beat the game, you know? And he's like, this is the final level. This is the boss level. It's hard. Why would beating the game be easy? Everyone here is trying to make it. People who made it in New York move here to try and make it here. Mm-hmm. You know, we're trying to get, no one in here is trying to get less famous. So I think about that all the time. And it's like, what do I offer you? Cause I didn't move here. It's like the old, I didn't come here to make friends thing. It's like, I do like friends and I would like friends. And I like making new friends, but that's not why I moved to LA. I know why I moved there. I moved there to advance my career and do LA specific things that I could only do there. You know, TV, I mean, now it's internet broadcast, like to be broadcast out mm-hmm. to a larger audience and who's doing that and how do they see me? And, I hope they want to do that with me. I hope they want to work with me or someone I can work with to broadcast ourselves, you know, out somewhere. So I always think about what can I offer someone, and I try not to think about what they can offer me as much as what I can offer them.
Ooh,
so
that's gold.
It's like the old JFK thing, like ask what you can do for your country. So I'm like, what can I do for LA? And a lot of times it's that I'm reliable and I'm available. And a lot of people are like, don't tell people you're available. I'm available. They're like, oh, seem busy. I'm like, what? Busy? What are you talking about? So maybe I'm doing it wrong. I don't know. But what's been working for me is that I show up on time and I like to hang out. I like to have fun and I always try. And, you know, people put me first on shows a lot because I, you know, I probably am not going to offend that many people. As long as we're not in a church or something. And by the way, I'll do a show in a church. I've done it before. I'll just be clean. It's not a problem. I've been in church.
Yeah, you grew up.
You grew up in one.
Grew up
I
in
can
a
do
church.
That.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I try to fit the thing and do the job. And in LA, there's also this economy of spots. Everyone wants a diverse show. No one wants to be known as, hey, don't do that show. They only book straight white guys. You just don't want to have that reputation in LA because they're like, oh, you only like straight white guys. What do you just wouldn't want to be known as that. So everyone wants to have a diverse show, but the scene is overwhelmingly, we're overrun with straight white guys. Mm. It is a big chunk of the scene. Every show I go to, there's 15 standing in the back waiting.
Right.
You know, it's just the supply and demand. There's way too many of them.
So it's like, how can you stand out? What can you offer that they can't?
Right. And a lot of times it's that I'm standing 15 feet from the stage and if someone drops out, I'm right there. But that if that's your, you know, obviously if you're famous, it's different, but it's like a lot of times it's like we need to fill time, you know? And guess what? I can fill some time.
Just like with Conan. I mean, they're like, oh, we need you tomorrow. You're like, oh, okay.
Well, I'll be there.
I'll be there.
You don't need a flight or a hotel. I'm just right here.
Yeah.
So, that's why I moved there is mm-hmm. because I need to be there. Cause you know, you might not be everyone's first choice. That's why auditioning exists. Cause everyone has a first choice. And you know what? Tom Cruise might be busy. You know, that's how people get careers. Tom Cruise can't do every movie. If he could, no one else would have a career. He'd be in every movie because he's the greatest. And we all know it. Everyone knows it. He still looks 30 years old. And that's literally auditioning wouldn't exist if everyone had the first choice. Auditions are filled with third and fourth and fifth choices. But you better, if you can be the fifth, the best fifth. If you're a fifth choice and the four couldn't do it, you got it. Boom. It's you, baby.
Yeah.
So that's the whole game to me is, hey, I'm get in that mix and throw those dice as many times as you can. And you end up getting stuff. Working hard and trying and being pleasant to be around is worth a lot. You know, if people, if everybody in LA's been, everybody in LA is pretty funny. Like, you go to a show, you see 10 comics, they're all pretty funny. I remember two of their names. They're all pretty good. But, boy, after the show, me and this guy hung out. He was a fun guy. We went out, did karaoke, went to, that was, and then you get it.
Hang out.
Doesn't always work. I mean, if you hang out and you fucking suck, they're like, fun hang, but we'll never book home.
Right, right.
It's a nightmare. You got booed. So you still got to be good, but it's like, some people just seem too cool for school. And it's like, you know, like we were talking about earlier with festivals. It's like, who do you want in your festival? Do you want, you know, guy who's on his phone, not hanging out before the show or after the show, is always like, can I go early and leave? It's like, do you want to be here at all? Mm-hmm. Like, I threw this festival because I want to have some fun. And comedy's fun. Like, people forget sometimes. This is supposed to be fun. This is the whole point. We're trying to entertain people, and it's easier if you're having a good time. Like that Sandler special, never seen anybody have that much fun. He's having, it makes you love him. You're like, guy, he's having a good time up there.
I haven't seen it yet.
It's really funny. Yeah. I like it a lot. But yeah, in LA, that's the way I've been trying to do it. And, you know, and it's also like, you know, I try to be a genuine guy. I'm not trying to be like, hey, who wants to have fun later? Who produces content? Right. You know, you try not to be like gross, but, you know, I do like, I'm always confused when people don't hang after. I'm like, what do you got tomorrow? I know you don't have a day job.
Right.
I got to get home and get a good 8 hours, then wake up and sit on my computer till my show. Like, what?
I've struggled, dude. It took me a long time and I'm still like, trying to be better at it, and by trying that means I'm not doing it clearly. Yeah. If you're you're either doing it or you're not.
There is no try.
Yeah, like I would never hang out. I would always I'm a comedian and I'm an artist and I just need to do my stage time and leave. Like I've like never hung out, and the few times I have been beneficial, mm-hmm. but it's something I just don't. I don't know why, but it's,
well, you want it to be organic. And that's what I love about LA. People go, oh, I hate LA. I hate the actors. And then, and I'm like, I don't hang out with actors. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? There's 10 million people live. I don't know how many people. It's millions of people. And I'm like, there's 8 or 10 that I really dig and I hang out with them. And if they have friends, we can hang out. But I'm not going, who produce, you work at a Paramount? Who? What?
Uh-huh,
you know,
right.
To just, you do what you're passionate about and do what you like and have fun doing. And you'll probably run into people similar. If you just do it long enough, somebody's like, man, I really dig what you do. You're a fun guy. I'd like to work with you. It'd be fun. No one gets hopefully you don't have a show business job for other reasons. Yeah. Why would you just go to a business and make a lot of money, you know, instead of betting on artists, which is like, who even knows? Like, sometimes they've $100 million in a movie and no one likes it. And they're like, oh, we did our best,
yeah.
You know? So it's like, it's such a crapshoot, but, there's some cool people in LA. I know a lot of people like, it's a phony fake and all that. And it's like, of course it is. Every city's filled with that kind of stuff. But, I found some cool people out there that I like to work with, and it's a lot of fun.
It's like, if you're phony and fake, you'll attract the phony and fake. But
yeah.
If you're real cool and authentic, you'll attract those people.
Yeah. And I, you know, the way my life and the way I grew up is like, you know, I'm a simple guy. I want to do my set and then hang out and have fun after it and mm-hmm. keep laughing with the funniest people alive. Why would I not take advantage? I'm friends with professional comedians.
It's awesome.
That Nate Bargatze bit where he's like, my wife's like, oh, you never laugh like that with me. And he goes, I hang out with, my friends are professional comedians. It's a pretty good time. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, I like this. I would never want to just do my set and leave. I mean, sometimes you have to because of scheduling or whatever, but it's like, I love the offstage part. I love hanging out with people and being like one of the cool things about the Conan Booker is he's met and worked with like every great comedian you can think of. He's been mm-hmm. doing that job for years and he has so many fun inside stories about what's happened behind the scenes. And it's like, why wouldn't you want to talk to that? Why would you just use him as a cog in your machine of like, I hope he likes this set so I can get it. turns out he's a really cool guy. Uh-huh. You don't want to just know this guy. Like, even if you never do Conan, this is a cool guy to know. He's got great stories and he's funny and he has great taste. Like, you don't just, and I think people can kind of tell when they're being used.
Yeah. People, especially at that level, the people you want to work with, they know the difference. Yeah.
And then they're like scared of him. Like, oh, there he is. I don't know if I should talk to him. It's like, what is this, high school?
Just
like,
be cool.
Come on.
I think what helps is having goals as well, because that, mm-hmm. that'll give you direction and almost confidence in maybe not being nervous. Because if you have a goal to get on Conan, oh, and you bump into the booker at Conan, you're like, oh, this is supposed to happen. It's not like, oh, no, there he is. It's like, right. Oh, no, I'm supposed to go talk to him mm-hmm. because this is part of my goals. So I think goals can almost be like a good credential to have to kind of give you confidence to pursue things that maybe outside of what's possible.
Well, it's just also to be a gentleman, be a human being. Like, if you have a goal, if there's someone you have your eye on that you'd like to pursue romantically, you don't walk up to them and go, hello, I'm interested in you in a romantic situation. It's a goal of mine. Like, you know, right. Get to know them, talk to them, see if they feel the same way about you. You know, like, and it just seems like a normal way to do it. You don't have to. I hate when people come up to me and they just don't know. I mean, it's not their fault, but people would come up and be like, I hear you book a show.
Oh, my gosh. Like, oh, yeah. I've been there.
Well, I feel that. Buy me a drink first. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's just to be a polite, decent person, which is doable.
That's what I'd be like. Doable. Oh, what's your name? Yeah. Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
They'd be like, yo, when can I do your show? And I was like, I don't even know who you are.
Or like, just think about, what do I want to say to this person that's not a request? Like,
boom.
It's mean to just do that. Mm-hmm. You know, so like, for example, like if there was like the Jimmy Kimmel booker, who I know, I could never do that show when she was booking it, because what he wanted and why he hired her was, he was like, I want to do debuts. I want up and coming comedians who have never done late night, and I want them to do it on Jimmy Kimmel. And I couldn't do it because I'd already done Conan. But I didn't go, oh, well, I'm never hanging out with you. What is in it for me? Mm-hmm. It's like, no, this is late night TV is my favorite thing. I know one of the bookers. It's fun to hang out with her. She has great stories. She's fun. She does a great job. So it's like, to just use people like everyone's in your life for a direct, like I think that's a terrible way to be. And you can totally tell when people do that. And it's just, why would you want to live your life that way? It's like, you work hard and find some cool people, and it will, if you're working hard and you're hilarious, it's not that no one does that and gets nothing.
Totally.
Not for long. I mean, you know, eventually that'll take you somewhere.
Well, I think you've showed today why you are having such positive success in your career so like early on, and why it's been, some people can get one opportunity, but then that's it, you know, but you've been able to actually build on each opportunity. And I think the things you've talked about today really show why you're able to sustain such momentum and how other people can do the same positively and not like trying to manipulate, you know?
Yeah. You can manipulate the crowd, but
ha.
If you try and manipulate bookers and industry, I mean, this is their job. They can see it coming just like anybody can.
At any level. Like you said, even if it's just like a local open mic booker, they can tell the difference between you being like, oh, I'm going to get a spot versus like, oh, you're just a cool person.
Yeah. And if you go like, if you go to a show and just hang out there and enjoy it, and have fun like you should be doing with your life. Like, hey, I'm a comedian. I got an open night. I'll go to this show. It's fun. I'll, you know, have a drink, support, enjoy it. You know what? You know who loves that? The person who runs that show.
100%.
Like, you're way more likely. That is way more likely to get you booked than desperately in panic, like sending them an email and bugging them or like. And they're like, oh, you want to do my show? You've literally never been to it.
Right.
How bad you want to do it? You don't even know what it's like.
Right.
How do you know you want to do it? You just want to use me. Like, it just, people just feel gross. And obviously that works for some people. And I send more emails than anybody. So it's like, but you have to know how you're coming. Just like how you have to know how you're coming across on stage. Mm-hmm. Like, if everybody knows when they see you walk into a party, you're going to corner them and try and get something out of them. It's like, people don't like that. And, you know, it's just like drawing the crowd in. Like, you know, people are like, hey, I hear there's karaoke going on later. You want to do that? That's what I like. And it's like, I probably am going to get along with that booker more than the booker who doesn't like it. Because We both like it. We'll enjoy working together more than me and somebody who likes to, you know, more of a homebody.
Yeah. So in landing this plane, because you are home here in the A.
I'm in the A, baby. A little bit,
so I don't want to monopolize all your time. But you mentioned moving to LA with the goal of getting on Conan.
Yeah.
You did that within 2 months.
Yeah.
So in closing this a little bit, one, what are your goals now and how important have goals been in continuing to ascend the ladder, if you will?
Yeah, they're very important. And the goals, doing Conan is fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy, but it's a possible thing that I set clear goals for and then ended up doing. But the goals after that are harder, I think. Obviously, I'd like to, stand-up-wise, I'd like to eventually do like a special, an album, do more late night appearances, things like that. I'd also love to do, you know, other things. I'd like to do a series of some kind. I like to have a podcast. We were talking about it earlier.
Yeah.
I love doing podcasts. And I do them pretty often, but I would like, I mean, I'd love to do them like every day. I think it's really fun. I love that medium so much. But pitching shows. I love movies a lot, but I feel like shows are more kind of what I'd be interested in.
Okay.
Movies. I mean, obviously movies are great, but,
you
I
have
feel
a, like now you have a script? Like, you have a pilot?
You've written? Yeah.
You're ready.
Yeah. So getting, you know, pitching to different networks and stuff and hopefully, getting something picked up. But, that's definitely a goal and a special and stuff. And I still haven't done an album. I know everybody has albums, but,
oh, interesting. Yeah. You haven't.
I just want to do it in conjunction with something else. Cause I got the material, but I want it to be like, hey, here's a thing I've done, either a special or a show or some thing. And then also, here's this album. If you like this, here's this thing. I just wouldn't want to do it without a companion thing.
Yeah, almost give context or like something right. else for them to jump onto. Mm-hmm.
Even just a podcast. If I, right. I just don't have, you know, I do the stand-up, but I'm also like, you know, I want the album to be heard by as many people as can hear it. So I want it to be smart. Along with something to kind of help it.
Smart.
Yeah. Cause I don't think it's not like comedy albums go viral. Something has to go viral. Then, oh, I like this thing.
Yeah.
I'll get the album.
It's almost just like something to have on the resume again. It's mm-hmm. like checking it off the list. It's like, oh, you did. I mean, like, it's not like you do Conan and then now all of a sudden you're starting to sell out Madison Square Garden.
Right.
You know, but it is like, oh, okay. Check that off the list. Got that on the resume. Oh, got an album here. Oh, like it's being just a stand up. Doesn't seem to be enough. It's like, oh, you're funny on stage. What else?
Right.
What else do you do?
Well, I would like to do, I mean, I like to do nothing all day. It's fun, but not every day. I'd mm-hmm. like to do nothing half the year and then half the year. I like stand up at night and I'd like half of my days of my year to be filled with, you know, shooting something, writing something, getting, you know, things like that done. But yeah, I also love having like a whole week of just nothing during the day, stand up, and I love that.
Yeah, but you did mention in when you were talking to my class earlier, which I'll post on the Friday of this release. We'll post that as an extra podcast. Yeah. But you're talking about being in the writer's room and how it's good pay, but you're literally there, like it's a 24/7.
Oh, there's a reason the pay is good.
Uh huh.
Because they're squeezing every drop of funny out of you, and I mean it's great, but it is like it was more work than I thought. And everyone you talk to with a writing gig, you don't see them doing stand up as much because, you know, sometimes they'll work you till, you know, midnight, you know, like they'll, uh-huh. they work you and it takes a lot out of you. You're writing and you're tired and then you get some sleep and then you want it to be good. So sometimes I would do extra work, you know, I'm not,
right.
I'm just at home till like 3 a.m. like getting it done so I can, you know, show them in the morning, and yeah, it is a lot of work, but I mean, it's worth it. They pay you good, but, it's definitely not, but it's different for different jobs. There's some writers you talk to, you're like, oh my God, the schedule's great. They don't work as like most writing rooms do. And, they have more free time, but it just depends.
What is it like in there? Is it a lot of bouncing around ideas or is it like you actually just physically writing?
There's this table session where you're bouncing around ideas and everybody's laughing and it's a lot of fun and, but it's not all that. A lot of it is 8 hours in front of your computer drinking coffee. But yeah, so those are great gigs. But and obviously, I'd love to have more. I think it's fun. It's like we're saying earlier, it's easier than washing dishes.
True.
I'll write jokes.
Right. Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, I had to write jokes for 8 hours today. And it's only $3,000 a week.
Right.
Like, oh, yeah, shut the fuck up. I can't tell my jokes in bars with my friends as much as used to because of all the money I'm making. It's like, what are you complaining about?
Keep perspective.
Yeah.
Keep perspective at every point. Mm-hmm. And even like we're talking about bombing. It's like, don't take it personally. It's one show on right. one night. It's not the end of the world. Don't take yeah. it personally.
Yeah. Going to have a lot of bombs.
Well, dude, this has been a long time coming.
Yeah.
We're now in the 150s.
Whoa.
And you were number Honor. Two, my man.
Let's pour out some water for that.
We can cheers some Fontas.
Cheers.
Mm.
We did it.
Oh.
We so, out here.
So
we're out here.
Before we get out of here, is there anything else you want the world to know?
Vote.
Vote, okay.
I don't know.
This is going to come out after all that. But you
well, vote voting. 2020.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. This is coming out after the midterms?
Yeah, because the midterms are like okay. tomorrow or Tuesday.
All right, guys. Well, let me tell you then. You're going to hear this after the midterms. Look what you did. Look what you know who you are. What? Come on. Really? Look at this. I'm looking at this map right now. What are you doing? Come on. I don't even know. That'll apply to some happened. Group.
Yeah. Some people would be like.
Some group's going to be at fault.
It's like, I'm on his side. Other people are like, what is he? Why is he? He's a jerk.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So where can they vote for you and follow you and support
Caleb
you?
Caleb Synan, C-A-L-E-B-S-Y-N-A-N. It's hard to say. I should have changed it a long time ago, but it's too late now. Synan, S-Y-N-A-N. Uh-huh. Look me up. If you can't remember that, just type in Caleb Conan. You can watch me on Conan and follow me from there. And my name's spelled right on there, so.
My man. Well, Caleb,
yeah, holler at me. Send me some nudes. No, nah, don't do
slide
that.
Slide through the DM.
Don't send me no nudes.
Any nudes after Conan?
I got one by accident. I don't think it was meant for me. I didn't understand the caption. I think she accidentally sent it to everybody on her phone instead of the person she meant to
send
it to. Yeah. Caption didn't make any sense. It looked like it was in response. I think she was sexting with someone and accidentally did it. But I still got to see it.
You still got it, though. Yeah, my
I'll
man.
Never forget.
Caleb Synan, thanks for being on Hot Bread. We got it. Send me that. We'll post it in the
I
show
will.
Notes.
I think that's illegal, but hey. Hot Breath, everybody.
Hot Breath.
Oh, that was fun. Nice. Sorry for spilling.
There it is, Hot Breath-a-verse. Ooh, Hot Breath-a-sode 157 in the books. Holy comedy. Yo, I think my favorite part about that episode is just hearing a lot of his success comes from just being a good person. Just being cool to hang out with. In almost all of these interviews, that seems to be a common trait of the successful people I interview is that they're just cool. They're just easy to work with. And, you know, even some of the people I've interviewed on here who at some point I'm like, oh, why aren't they further along? They've hit all these big highs. Why haven't they hit the next level? And then you meet them or you learn just different sort of character traits of people. And you learn, hopefully from these episodes, you learn what to do and also what not to do. But that's why I like to interview all different types of comedians from all different walks of life and all different experiences so we can learn from them all, positive or negative. So thank you for tuning into this one. I would love to hear what your favorite part of it was. There's so much information in here. Holy cow. I feel like we should all just go try to get on Conan now. We'll see. You know, it's just a kid with a dream, you know? Sorry, I'm actually looking. I'm posting this behind the scenes on my Patreon as well. So I was actually like talking to the camera while talking to you on the audio. So meta. So yeah, let me know what you think about this episode, what you learned about it. What did you find most valuable? All of our social media is Hot Breath Pod. That's Instagram, Facebook, all that jazz. My website, joelbyerscomedy.com. If you want to come see me live, I have a game show. This is breaking news, okay? We have Comedy the Game Show happening December 29th at the Laughing Skull Lounge here in Atlanta. Yes, you heard it here first. It's going to be a live game show, but also a podcast. I'm recording as a podcast to post on the Patreon. So pretty much what I'm saying is, we made it. But it's thanks to you and your support and actually inspiring me to know what's possible with Hot Breath beyond just, you know, dope interviews. We can also create a lot of other dope projects. So December 29th here in Atlanta, even if you're not based out of Atlanta, You're in the immediate area, which I've met some of you as I traveled around to like Tennessee and North Carolina and Florida and Alabama. Hey, make a trip of it. It's a Saturday. It's at 5 p.m. It's going to be so dope. I'm so excited about it. Oh, my gosh. This is so exciting. So that all being said, you want to keep hanging out throughout this week? Hey, I post new interviews every Monday, but on Patreon, I'm posting stuff pretty much almost daily. If you liked Caleb's interview here, you would definitely love the Q&A he did with my comedy class over on Patreon. He's just a wealth of information, and when you actually meet him and get around him, you start to understand why and how he has become so successful so quickly. So he's really an inspiration for all. I hope this podcast in some way, shape, or form is an inspiration to you. You are an inspiration to me. So the more we can keep connecting and interacting, the more we can keep growing. So that being said, let's land this plane, huh? I say we get out of here. I will link in the show notes the link to the live game show if you'd like to pick up some tickets. Also a link to the Patreon if you want to log on there and see Caleb's Q&A or me posting the behind the scenes of me even recording this and showing you my setup here at home, or just a lot of dope stuff. I post the Type 5 podcast on there as well. And I'll link that. I'll link Caleb's first interview as well in the show notes here. And also the store. If you want to pick up some Hot Breath merch before Christmas, get on it before the shipping, you know, TikTok on the Christmas merch. So shout out to Steve Rivera. He bought a pair of socks and was posting them on Facebook, which was really cool to see. So if you get something and post about it, I'll be sure to repost it, share it, shout you out on here as well. You know, we're a community. We're a network. So we're all in this together. I may actually go on there and buy some stuff now that I think about it. Yeah, I'm going to go do that. I'm going to click the link in the show notes and go buy a hoodie. So anyway, yeah, there's hoodies, stickers, T-shirts, socks, phone cases. Anyway, let's get out of here. I love you all so much. Shout out to my engineer, Amon Garner. He's just dope. Boldcoy.com is the link to his podcast network he has going on. And of course, at the end of all of these, I am forever indebted for thanking my wife because she created the theme song for Hot Breath. So thank you, dear, for all your continued support and passive-aggressive love. And Hot Breath, thank you. And I'll see you next Monday, or I'll see you over on the Patreon. But until then, right here on Hot Breath. Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.